Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and one time I got fucked with an 11-inch stainless steel dildo in front of a crowd, and the crowd cheered, and it was great. And that's the story of my life. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and still recovering from the last several play events that I've done.
Yeah, you're not feeling too good today, and I am hungover and also recently had my first shrooms trip, so we're both just kind of in a strange brain space, but we did want to return to the topic of play parties and do the part two that we promised you, which is about what happens once you get to the play party. If you missed part one, it was about stuff you do before the party, like finding it and getting ready for it and getting dressed for it and stuff, and today we're going to talk about the party itself, which is for me the most terrifying part. Like I love getting ready for things, and then I arrive at the thing and I'm like, I need to walk around the block 6 times to gather the courage to walk in. And I heard a similar story from Gillian Keenan recently, the spanking fetishist, who said, like, after a lifetime of knowing she was a spanking fetishist, she went to her first spanking play party, and she like made, I forget if it was cookies or cupcakes or something for the party, and she stood outside and she like physically couldn't bring herself to go in, and she like threw out the treats and went home. And she tells this story as an example of like, it's okay to be nervous and scared, and it's like really normal, and like now she goes to parties regularly, and like I think that's a pretty normal thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think people tend to get really, really nervous about environments like this, and they really feel like they don't know what to expect, or it's going to be incredibly intimidating or like incredibly overtly sexual all the time and like really intense. And people tend to go into these parties the same way they go into sex, with this like fear that they're going to ruin the mood, or they're going to like entirely fuck up the event for themselves and everyone else. Mm-hmm. And really, I think universally the experience I hear most from people is that play parties are surprisingly chill.
Yeah.
That, like, it's there's usually a snack table with people chatting around it. Like, it's and I mean, I'm speaking as someone who does this all the damn time at this point, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's, they're not that divorced from other parties. I was at one recently and I was like, I just want to be at a party where people have pants on. Like, I'm just, I can't believe I've finally actually hit this point, but I'm tired of seeing butts.
I was at a party last night with my partner's friends, and at one point there was like an insinuation during some truth or dare thing that like some clothing might come off, and someone was like, oh no, this isn't that kind of party. And I was like, wow, like if this was my friend group, this would absolutely be that kind of party.
Right. I don't know. I don't go to parties that aren't that kind of party.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But to your point, like I think that the thing, one of the things that surprised me most when I first started going to play parties, and I haven't really been to that many, but I had always envisioned that it would look like the orgy scene in Short Bus. Like, it would be like literally every person in the room is having sex with someone, and you walk in and it's like that thing where you reach the end of the cafeteria line in middle school and you're like, oh my God, who do I sit with? Except with this, it's like, oh my God, who do I fuck? Like, I have to quickly pick someone to fuck, or I'm going to just look like a loser over here. And it's much more like you said, there's a lot more like people standing around and talking, or even just like watching, than I anticipated, which is definitely a lower pressure thing, I think.
Yeah. And so this does depend on which parties you're going to, in which environments you're going to. We're talking a lot about queer play parties, mm-hmm. because that's where a lot of our experience is. Yeah. And queer play parties tend to be much more on this side of the spectrum, where we're like, yeah, people are fucking, but also we're just kind of sitting around talking and chill, and like, because the act of being naked and the act of having sex isn't super taboo in these, in like queer and kinky communities, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have that like, oh, sex is happening near us, oh my God, reaction. However, there are parties out there where that is a thing, right? Where you do walk in and everyone's kind of fucking, or cruising doesn't necessarily happen in verbal negotiation, right? It's eye contact, it's, you know, gentle touch and whatever. And a lot of people feel uncomfortable in those spaces, particularly queer and marginalized folks. However, they definitely exist. The swinger community is big for that, and gay male parties tend to be really big for that. And, like, I'm not going to say that's the wrong way to throw a party. However, know which culture you're walking into and what the expectations in that environment are, right? If you're going to have a much, if you're going to be in a much more overtly sexual space, try and know that when you're walking in and know what to expect from those places. And that's not always possible. Like, I've walked into parties and been like, this one's not so much for me though. And like, don't be afraid to dip if you're not enjoying the vibe or not feeling safe or comfortable or whatever that looks like.
Yep, absolutely. One of the most common questions we got from listeners is some variation of, how can I work up the courage to speak to people? Or how can I ask to play with people I don't know? Or how can I know if someone is open to being asked to play? Do you have any advice on that kind of thing?
Yeah, some parties have systems for that, systems for flagging, where they will have wristbands of different colors for, like, I would like to be approached, or I would like to, I'm looking for X type of play, or if I want to talk, I'll come to you, it's fine. Mm-hmm. So that's super cool and helpful, but that's not going to happen across the board. My favorite way to get to know new folks at a new event is to volunteer, because then you have a reason to be talking to people. Mm-hmm. You know, you're working the door or whatever, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, but, you know, you have a job and you get to connect with people talking about that, and then later on you can come back around and you've already kind of built up a little bit of a rapport. Mm-hmm. In terms of knowing someone's interested in playing, you don't until you ask. generally, sometimes there's also cruising online before the event, or a, like, wish board or something along those lines that you could put something up and, like, kind of a personal ad type thing as well. Again, if you want, like, more passive ways. If you're seeing someone, like, across the room and you're like, hey, that person's cute, honestly, approaching them is not all that different from approaching them at any other kind of party or social event, right? Mm-hmm. You can, you know, glance over at them and see if you can, like, make eye contact or whatever and see if there's any sort of, like, connection that way. And then go over and, you know, if they're in a group that is kind of open to space of someone else joining in, you can hop in and say, hey, I'm new to this event. Y'all seem super cool. You know, does anyone want to give me, like, have you been here before? Is there anything you can tell me about this event? Like, you have any pro tips for, like, what I should do on my first time, right? You can play up the fact that you're like, hey, I'm a little lost, confused beeb. Queers like to help. So, like, there will probably be someone in the group who's like, oh, hey, yeah. If people are talking to one other person, I tend to not try and approach, because odds are they're already either flirting or negotiating or setting something up. And if someone's negotiating, they may be, like, starting to slip into scene space. So you don't want to, like, pop into the middle of that and be like, hey, y'all, you seem fun, while someone's like, so how do you feel about four fingers or the whole fist in your ass? Like, how's that? And you're like, hi, I'm new. Like, don't be that guy. However, if you're looking at, like, a cluster of people, you know, you look at the people who are speaking loudly enough that, like, you can kind of hear them from where you're at. Like, those are groups that might be open to someone new. Mm-hmm. That said, if you do just hop up and approach people and you're like, hi, I'm new, help, maybe give them an out or something after a little while, right? Chill for a little bit, talk to them, build up a little bit of rapport, and then say, you know, oh, I'm going to go get a drink and take a lap or whatever. Does anyone want to come with me? Or something like that. Because I definitely do experience folks who are like, I'm anxious and nervous, and this is the only person I've spoken to all night, but they were nice to me.
Right.
So they're my best friend now. And, like, that person is probably also there to play.
Yeah.
And, like, may love talking to you, but may not want to spend the whole night with you. So you can definitely, like, back off and give them a chance to come with you, or you know, hop around, talk to two or three other people, and then come back. If this is someone that I'm not, like, looking to just be friendly with, and I do want to play with and kind of want to broach that topic, my favorite, like, my go-to is, especially if you're at a kink event, like, you're gonna start talking about sexy shit. Like, that's just, it's one of the topic of conversations, even if you're doing the, like, conversation starter where you're commenting on something you can both see. Mm-hmm. Here, that's probably dicks. So, like, you still have, you know, you have segues to be talking about what you're into or what brought you here, or what kind of stuff you enjoy playing with, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then getting to, you know, someone mentioning something that I am into or saying something in a way that I'm like, ah, okay. I always have an opportunity to be like, you know what, you and I, we should talk about that later. You and I, like, we should have a conversation about that thing. to see if they take that an opportunity to be flirty back or whatever. And that kind of gives them, like, a hint that's like, oh, but if you want to do that with me, though,
yeah,
talk about it. and then if I'm being more direct, towards the end of a conversation, I'll say, like, I really enjoyed talking to you. I'd love to, like, come back and flirt with you some other time. Or, like, you know, if you want to, you know, I need to get a drink. If you want to, like, come find me in a little bit or whatever, I'd love to talk to you about maybe setting something up to play tonight or at another event. I don't know what your dance card looks like. You know, and again, giving them, like, opportunities to be like, oh, you know, that would be great, but another time. But just saying, like, hey, like, I'm into this thing. If you're into it, come find me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like your emphasis on, like, being conversational. There's a sex club I go to in Toronto where the third floor is allocated for sex things. And, like, you need to, like, if he's trying to go up there, he needs to have a woman with him in order to go. And I've been approached by so many men at that place who, like, within 10 to 30 seconds of starting a conversation with me will be like, do you want to go to the third floor? As in basically, like, do you want to go fuck me right now? And it's like, it's not that the answer is automatically no. It's just that I literally don't know if I want to fuck you because you've just asked me this immediately upon starting a conversation with me. I have no idea who you are, what your vibe is, whether I'm even, like, attracted to you. And also, like, the weirdest thing about this too is that if I say no, like, the conversation is over, first of all, because, like, to them, their goal has, like, not happened. So they're going to move on to another person, and they're going to do the same thing to another person, like, right in front of me 9 times out of 10. So it's just, I really don't think it's that much to ask to, like, have a little convo with someone before you invite them to do sexy things, like, not only for their sake, but also for yours, because, like, if it turns out that you're not compatible in some way, whether it be views or values or what you want to do sexually, like, it's good to know that before you, like, launch into whatever comes next.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and a lot of spaces do have a, like, social area. Mm-hmm. That is, whether it's, like, near the snack table or it's a particular room or whatever. So you do have a place where you can kind of sit and chat with people. Some other parties will even have, like, welcome circles where you can say things like who you are and, like, one thing you're looking to do that night or, mm-hmm. you know, and people will also tend to talk about, like, their safer sex stuff or whatever in those circles, too, if that's their thing. So I really like that as well because it gives you a little bit of, like, structure. I love when the party gives you ways to cruise and to communicate.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Some of the questions we got were about the sort of next component or stage of this process, which is negotiation at play parties. And in particular, some people were wondering, like, how do you even do a full negotiation so quickly with someone you have just met? Like, it feels like when I plan a scene, and I know when you plan scenes sometimes with, like, partners of ours, like, we take long periods of time to plan scenes sometimes. And sometimes it's, like, you know, a half an hour to an hour long text conversation, or sometimes it's, like, several conversations over the course of days or weeks or months. So how do you do, like, a quick and dirty negotiation for a scene you want to do at a play party?
So the first thing I want to remind folks, and I am talking a little bit about play parties and a little bit about conferences throughout this episode, I think. It's experience, similar experience in some ways and different in others. However, if you're seeing someone playing in a dungeon, whether it's at an event or a single night, odds are that is not a pickup scene. Like, if you see someone doing a heavy scene, in a dungeon, that person probably didn't pick up that scene that night and negotiate it there, right? You know, if someone's doing something really, really elaborate at a conference on Friday night, that person has been planning that scene for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. A lot of people go and see how crowded the dungeon is at Friday night at an event and think, wow, all these people have done so much cruising and pickup play all day today, and now they're all getting up to shenanigans. And it's like, no, they've been, like, they have one weekend where they see all of these people. They scheduled this shit out months in advance. So that's one thing. And I say that to say, I don't think it makes sense for you to go into an event looking to have your heaviest scene that requires the most detailed negotiations and this really elaborate stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for pickup play, I think your first step is to reflect on which of your kinks you're comfortable doing in a quick and dirty negotiation.
Yeah.
So thinking about what you're comfortable with and what your limits are before you're horny and overwhelmed at the event is a good way of just kind of setting those boundaries in advance, because I know my impulse control isn't great when hot people are standing in front of me. So if you're going to a party and you're thinking, like, okay, I'm cruising for some impact play tonight, I'm comfortable, you know, being hit by hands and toys that I'm familiar with, like various paddles or anything. I'm not trying to do anything that draws blood, but that's like, that's kind of, and I can go into an event and think, like, this is kind of what I want to do. I want to experience pain, and these are the ways I'm comfortable in experiencing pain. So then you can go into that event and know already, like, the stuff that you're looking for and the stuff that's important to you to play with. And you can, I'm not saying go in and say this is exactly the scene I'm looking to have.
Yeah.
But you can go in and say, like, I'm looking for pain play, and, you know, is this a thing that you're down with playing with? And then you already have a starting point, right? You're not starting from the, like, well, you're hot, let's do a yes, no, maybe list together.
Yeah.
You've started by, like, these are the things that I'm craving right now or feeling excited about doing. Do any of them strike your fancy? And hopefully that person also has things that they came there craving and looking forward to. And you can be like, great, so here is my condensed yes, no, maybe list, my 3 to 5 things I was thinking about before I came here. And you see where those few things overlap. Mm-hmm. And then, because you've thought about these things, and generally for me, the stuff I do pickup play for is the stuff I do all the damn time, because I'm super comfortable with it. So I know how to say, hey, great, I want to do pain play. I tend to, like, you know, I want to, in a 1 to 10, I want to sit in this range. These are the words I use for safe words.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the 1 to 10 scale is a really useful thing in cases like this, like whether you're doing pain or other kinds of sensation or even, like, more psychological stuff. Because if someone has just met you, they don't have a sense necessarily of your tolerance. And so they can calibrate either in the first part of the scene or throughout, however they prefer, of by asking you, like, how much is this on a scale of 1 to 10? And where would you like to be? And, like, this is always a useful tool, but I think particularly for someone you don't know very well and who doesn't know you very well. And I was also going to say, when you were talking about, like, picking the specific activities that you're interested in doing, I think I mentioned this last time we talked about this, but, like, having a prop with you that goes with the particular kink or kinks you're looking to do, like a paddle, something like that, could be a great conversation starter. I often used to like to, like, bring a new paddle that I hadn't had a chance to try yet, or a you know, conversation-provoking paddle that was kind of strange-looking or whatever, and it would be a conversation starter, and then you could say, like, you know, I haven't used this yet, or, like, I haven't had it used in this specific way yet, and then, like, if they are interested in doing that, they can, like, hop onto that conversational thread, but if they're not, it's, like, fairly easy for them to back off of that.
Yeah. I also, I'm sure many of you have heard these before, but I have an acronym that I go through to remember all of the things I like to touch on when I'm negotiating. The word is simmer, so the S is for sex, I is, you know, sex, are you going to have it, what are your safer sex practices, etc. I is for intensity, how intense do you want this scene to get? If it's pickup play, probably not very. just a thought. M is for metacommunication. How are we going to communicate while we're in scene and afterwards? Things like safe words and this 1 to 10 scale and anything like that. The other M is for motivations. So you do, I think, definitely want to calibrate how you want the scene to feel. And I think that's the biggest thing that gets skipped over in these shortened conversations. Mm-hmm. But it's a it has a huge impact on what the scene can be like. Mm-hmm. E is for the end and aftercare. What does that look like? It probably looks different with pickup play than it does with other kinds of play.
Yeah. And that might also involve figuring out whether one or both of you has a time that you have to be done by. Like, especially if yes. it's like a conference, there may be like another thing that you have to go to at a certain time, and kink can mess with your ability to perceive time properly.
Yes. And then the R is for risk assessment, which mm-hmm. is anything depends wildly based on what you're playing with, but it's basically where you would sit down and say, okay, these are the ways this can go wrong and how we're going to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm. We're thinking of doing, as I've mentioned, an episode of the Dildorks where I hypnotize you, and I think that we should actually follow that model of negotiation when we do that. I think that that would be a cool way to like show how that works.
Yeah, definitely. We have to do that soon.
Yeah. A question we got that is very relevant to me and my social anxiety is, what can I do if everyone around me is busy with a scene and I'm just standing there awkwardly watching? And this ties into another question that we got that was common, which is like, is it okay to just watch and not participate? But I get the sense that this person asking this question is wondering like, what if I do want to participate, but there's just like stuff going on around me and I'm just like the odd one out?
Well, first of all, voyeurism is participation.
Yeah.
So you can, and I often do, go to play parties exclusively to sit around and watch. Mm-hmm. So I would say both for the people who like are curious about that, but also for the person who does want to be playing and like is feeling nervous and awkward sitting on the side, it's okay to just be on the side watching. Mm-hmm. Like you are a person that is, they expect that at parties. There mm-hmm. are people who come fully with that intention. No one is looking at you and being like, look at that lonely loser in the corner of the sex party.
Like, yeah,
that's, you know, it's pretty expected. Don't be fucking around on your phone. I know it's a fairly common fidget that we do when we're like, oh no, I look lonely. I must look busy instead. However, if you look busy, you will continue to be lonely because people won't approach you. And most spaces do not allow phones out because you look like you're filming people, and that's nerve-wracking.
Yeah. It may be worth thinking about if there is some kind of fidgety thing that you could do that would not deter people from approaching you and would not involve your phone. Like, okay, this is a weird example, but one time I was asked to perform music at a play party. It was a strange one. And I, at certain points, just like sat in the corner with my ukulele, just like having a good time by myself. But like, I don't really know what you would do. Maybe you're like untangling the falls of your flogger or something. Like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think leather care is probably a really good one. If you're, like, sitting there taking care of your leathers or something.
Mm-hmm. Because then maybe somebody will approach you and be like, hey, like, do you want to do my boots?
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it'll have someone to approach you. So if you have, like, a kink skill that you can be doing alone, if you're a person who does rope and you want to be just kind of chilling alone playing with your ties. Mm-hmm. If you get too invested in a thing, somewhat people might not want to approach you simply because you look like you're scening with yourself.
Yeah.
Which is also a thing folks do. But if you're like very clearly just kind of like, you know, cleaning up or organizing things or whatever, like, I think that's probably okay. I have seen folks journal or doodle or draw. Mm-hmm. In a notebook, some spaces won't let you do that. Just again, I mean, you're not photographing people, but if you're like drawing what you're seeing, that's still a whole thing.
Yeah. So, and it also could seem like you're like taking notes for a story you're gonna write or something, which I've definitely done, but is for sure the sort of thing you should ask permission for before doing it.
Right. And there might be spaces where they're more comfortable with you doing that than others, right?
Yeah.
All of this, we're talking about voyeurism. You don't sit too close to a scene.
Mm-hmm.
If you are just sitting around watching, you shouldn't be, you know, right behind them, close enough where you're in their peripheral vision. Like, that's a lot. You shouldn't be, like, risking being hit by a flogger, because then you're inserting yourself into their environment, right? They should be able to comfortably ignore your presence if they want to.
Yeah. A social anxiety tip that I have to constantly remind myself of is that generally people don't think it's weird if you're at a party and you're by yourself and you just are looking around. And if anyone makes eye contact with you, you can, like, smile at them. Like, my internal monologue about that is always like, oh, that's so weird. People are going to think I'm a creep. But it's like, that's actually a very normal thing to do at any kind of party. And, like,
right. That's
how conversations get started sometimes. And, like, it just it's a thing that makes me feel instantly like I am somewhat in drag as a more outgoing person than I actually am. And that can be a really helpful mindset shift.
Yeah, depending on the size of the party, too, the majority of these people are not tracking your every movement.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, someone saw you standing alone in the corner. And if they thought about it at all, the people they're with are off getting a drink or getting laid or whatever, and they'll come back around and they'll talk to someone else. Oh, someone's over at the bathroom, whatever. Like, they're not like, that person has been entirely alone forever. Like, if someone's watching you that closely, it's because they want to fuck you. So, you know, maybe they'll come over and talk to you.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting, like, as we mentioned in the last episode about this, like, having expectations is really only going to hurt you. Well, I mean, it could potentially hurt other people, I guess.
Yeah.
But if you do just spend an entire evening at a play party watching what's going on and maybe even, like, making mental notes for later fantasizing or scenes you want to do or paying attention to how people approach other people and how scenes get started – I mean, it's a great learning opportunity. You can be sort of like the Jane Goodall of kink as long as you're not being creepy and objectifying about it and you have people's, like, consent to be watching their scenes up close and stuff. But it can definitely be an opportunity for gathering intel more so than having sexual experiences right out the gate.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a plan to attend a play party and you can make a plan to play at a play party.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not the same plan. And I think, like, it's, like, it is fully acceptable to attend a play party. Like,
yeah.
You haven't failed the play party. You haven't missed out on the play party experience. Like, you were at an orgy. You were at a play party. You were at a kink event. You probably saw some cool, weird shit. You probably left with a lot of new thoughts and probably a few new contacts. Like, you went to, like, you don't go to other social parties and be like, well, I didn't dance with a single person ever.
I do that.
I didn't. But... Oh, you do? It's like, I failed the whole party.
Yeah,
like,
there's
so many other things to do at parties.
Yeah. Those have been some of my, like, darkest nights, honestly, is when I gather the courage to go to a party and I either don't really talk to anyone or don't, you know, achieve some arbitrary goal I had set for myself. And it's totally a case of, like, your expectations poisoning your actual experience, which is just such a common thing in kink and in life. And I know it's really, really hard, like, because you're going to the party because, like, you want something to happen, presumably. But if you can just sort of embrace the journey and let whatever happens happen, you will have a better time.
Yeah.
It's definitely a function of my, like, romanticizing, forward fantasizing about everything. Like, I'm just like, what if I meet someone at the party? And what if we dance together? And what if we fall in love? And what if they're my soulmate? And it's like, if that doesn't happen, it feels like such a bigger loss than it, like, actually is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think culturally we just romanticize parties. Like, that is the story we tell about what a party is.
It's a place where you
meet your true love
and
something exciting happens. And it's like, no, it's just a place where a bunch of people are in the same place. And that goes lots of different ways.
Yeah. We got a lot of questions from folks about saying no to people, which is a tricky thing at parties where you're dancing with people, just the same as it is a tricky thing at play parties. And there's sort of two varieties of this question. There's the question of like, what if you don't intend to play at this party at all and you just went to watch or to hang out with a friend or whatever? Sorry, what was that?
I said, ugh, that's so much easier.
Yeah, exactly. And so you want to say, no thanks, I didn't come here to play. And then there's the other case, which is like someone approaches you to play and you're not into them, whether it's because you're not attracted to them or you don't actually want to do the thing that they're suggesting. And as you said, I think that that one is a trickier situation. So do you have any wisdom on rejecting people at play parties?
I mean, so if you're not there to play at all, that's super easy because you can just say, oh, no, I'm just watching tonight. Thank you, though. Mm-hmm. And most people, I think, will be used to that response. And I think that's like totally acceptable. You can't really go with that one if you're going to be sucking dick in front of them in a half hour, though.
Yeah. And it's so tempting to do that. And I have definitely, like, because when this happens to me, I do sometimes freeze up and I'm like, I don't know how to say no to someone. So I do just say that. I do just, like, say, you know, I'm not really in the mood tonight or whatever. And it's like, well, I'm really not in the mood because, like, you haven't put me in the mood, but I may get into the mood later. So it's like, I don't want to be mean to people because I just don't – that's not ethical to me. Like, they put themselves out on a limb to come to the party, let alone to speak to me. So, yeah, I don't want to be a dick to people about it.
Yeah. I mean, you can simply say no thank you is enough.
Yeah. The reason for me that I struggle with just saying no thank you, like as much as we hear like, you know, Oprah says no is a full sentence. And like, absolutely, it should be accepted as a no. But my experience, especially with like straight men in the dating world, not that that's necessarily going to be the crowd at the play party you choose to go to. If I say no or no thank you, I would say like 7 times out of 10, they say why, which to me is always just like, why would you ask this? This is so much worse. Just walk away. Just take it. Just leave. Like, you're in a good place now. You can still save this situation. I get so frustrated and I feel like I have to have a reason so that I can answer that question. And like, really what I should just say is I'm not interested, but then they're still going to be like, why? Because they're behaving like toddlers.
Right. Okay. Well, when I get caught in the why trap where someone genuinely doesn't want to know the answer to the question, I just say, like, do you really want the answer to that? Like, do you want me to sit down and tell you about all of the things I find unattractive about that prospect right now? Is that the conversation you want to be having? Like, that doesn't sound fun.
I know. There's this Alana Massey essay where she, like, a man approaches her on the street and is doing this, like, trying to hit on her and asking why. And she eventually just goes, because I don't find you attractive. And he's, like, so floored by that. That's, like, a level of honesty that, as you said, they're not prepared for when they ask that question. And it's like, well,
right, you asked. Like, you asked why.
Yeah.
The answer's obvious. It's not – they're like, you must have another reason other than not being interested in me.
Yeah.
Like, there must be some extenuating circumstance that could explain.
You must be uptight or frigid or...
Like, no, the answer is just no.
Yeah.
And, like, I have done the, like, do you want that? Like, and I've... I've also done the, like, it doesn't matter why. Like,
yeah,
just no, it's no thank you. Because like, when they start pushing that, that's when I stop wanting to be polite, because they've proven that they didn't earn that. If they're not going to expect the no. Although I recognize that is a more confrontational way to go into those spaces, and like, it's something I'm more comfortable doing because those spaces aren't uncomfortable for me. But when you have the layers of, you know, this is a nervous new space and everything, that can be a lot harder. So it can help to go in. You can say something I've done. No, I'm not playing with anyone new tonight. Thank you, though. Because they don't know what your relationship with anyone else you play with is going
to
be.
That's really smart. Right? Like, I'm hesitant to ever reject someone with a lie. But if it's genuinely a lie where, like, they're not going to find out and it's not going to hurt them, I'm a little bit more like, okay, like, it's possibly less hurtful than the alternative, so I don't know.
Or you can even do something like, oh, I'm actually, I'm not, I'm not playing with anyone that I don't have, like, an established rapport and dynamic with, you know? And if they seem cool, you can be like, you know, we can talk a little bit and, like, maybe chat down the line, if that is true.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, I don't really know you, you just walked up to me and said, hey, want to go to the third floor, you can say, like, oh, you know, I'm down to chat for a little bit, and maybe another time down the line, like, I'll come talk to you about something, but I'm not playing with anyone I don't have, like, an established dynamic with or an established rapport with.
Yeah.
Because, like, the definitions of those things are a little wibbly, right? So if you talk to someone 15 minutes later, you're like, we have established rapport. Like, I'm not playing with anyone that isn't a friend. Suddenly, I am friends with this person. I have talked to them for 15 minutes. We seem close.
Yeah. I've encountered this issue at the sex club because I will occasionally say, like, no, like, I'm, you know, I'm demisexual. I don't really play with, like, people I don't have an emotional connection to. And there is a certain type of dude who will be like, well, let's talk. Let's develop an emotional connection. I'm like, I really don't even know how to tell you that the very fact that you have just said that indicates I do not want to form an emotional connection with you. But
right.
Okay.
Right. That's what you say, like, no, forming the emotional connection is to screen out people who say things like that. That's the point of the connection. That's really what I'm working towards.
Yeah, just like, no, I only become emotionally attracted to people who respect my no immediately. And sorry, just didn't pass that test. So,
yeah.
Peace.
What's nice about this, though, these things that we're saying is, like, these are things that we've encountered a lot.
Yeah.
And we've thought of these phrases afterwards. These are always the things that you're like, ugh, I should have said.
Yeah.
But when these things come up often enough, you get to keep that thing in your back pocket and bring it out the next few times.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So very vaguely related. But when I was tripping on shrooms for the first time over the weekend with my friend Brent, I don't remember why this came up, and it may have just come up randomly because such is the nature of shrooms. But I turned to him and I was like, did you know that if someone asks you to hang out and you don't want to hang out with them, you can just say, no, thanks, I'm not feeling it. And Brent was like, that's very wise. Like, he was just humoring me. And then, like, an hour later, we were talking about, like, some guy I wasn't that into. And Brent was like, did you say, no, thanks, I'm not feeling it. But it's, like, the reason that I really emphasize, like, literally memorizing lines like this is because, as I said, like, when you get put on the spot in a situation like this, especially if you have social anxiety or general anxiety, or it's your first time at this event, or you feel physically outsized by the person, or whatever the case may be, like, the words might fly right out of your head. So if you have practiced, like, perhaps literally aloud in the mirror, practice these lines, it is much easier to bust them out.
Yeah, absolutely. I have definitely been in situations, I'm realizing more and more that my ADHD as well with task switching, if I'm like in something, like, I felt bad. I saw someone recently, happens a lot, honestly, in public transit, where I have my headphones in, and if I'm listening to, like, an audiobook or a podcast and someone talks to me, it's like, no, I was in that world.
Yeah.
Like, I did not know I was on the subway. Now I'm back on the subway and there's a new person and they're saying words to me that I need to craft meaning from.
Yeah.
Shit. And, like, by the time my brain catches up to the fact that, like, there are people here, they're gone, and I've been a weirdo. like, and I know, like, they're already walking away, and my brain catches up, and I'm going, oh, I just sounded like a dick. And it's over. The moment has passed. Welp. Okay. So having things that I can fall back on, there are times when those words are coming out of my face before my brain is a part of the conversation already.
Yeah.
Because it's just autopilot. So having those, like, catchphrases in the same way that, like, when I worked retail, I had the thing I said when I picked up a phone, and I had the thing I said when I handed someone a bag.
Yeah.
It's just, you can kind of put it in your brain so that you have that queued up for when you're not actually thinking.
Yeah. And another thing I've learned is, like, sometimes I get so caught off guard by a question of this nature that I will say no when the actual answer is, like, maybe if I talked to you more. But no is just the first thing that comes out of my mouth because it's like a defensive response and it just feels easier. And so one thing I've actually learned from doing my other podcast, Question Box, where we ask people questions and we usually tell them up front, like, you can take time to think about things, is like, if someone asks you a question, you can just say, can I have, like, I need a minute to think about that. Or I need a few minutes to think about that. It really doesn't even matter what the fuck the question is in any context. Like, I think that that is a really good tool to have in your back pocket, and you do not have to be ashamed to say that.
Yeah, and something that I fall back on a lot as well is just kind of dorky honesty. So I have fully said things like, sorry, I'm finding this room really overwhelming and distracted. I really want to pay attention to you, but I'm looking around, but everything around here is catching my eye and it's making it hard to follow this, you know, or like someone asking me something and being like, I am really wanting to say something clever and charming in this moment because, fuck, you're real cute. And that was certainly a thing you just said to me, but wow, I am, none of it's coming to me at all. And I guess I'm just going to live in this really awkward moment instead, you know? And like, that's endearing.
Yeah.
And you can kind of lean on that and just be like, well, this is what's happening, I guess. This is what I want to convey to you, but, you know, I just, the words are not putting that together. And I think enough people have been in that situation that they can, like, empathize and are willing to give you the benefit of the doubt with that.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to assume that people around you, especially people who seem like they've been to the event that you're at many times before, are like way cooler and smoother than you and like might judge you if you're not at that level of coolness and smoothness. But like really, most people on the inside are at least a little bit nervous, or at least they were at one point, and so they can empathize with that. So it, yeah, it's totally okay to acknowledge that. I think it can even be very charming. It's led to great conversations for me many times.
Yeah. And I think if you're a newbie at an event, just kind of getting back to the, like, you've been approached and asked to play, you can also say something along the lines of, like, I don't know, I just got here, I'm still calibrating to the space. I, you know, I'd love to talk to you for a little while and, like, maybe do something. If you're in that, like, well, I don't actually know how I feel about this person, right?
So we got a couple more questions that I have on my list here, but one of them was tips on hosting a play party. And the more that I think about this, the more that I think this actually needs to be its own episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because your methods are very exacting and thorough. And also you are planning one that hasn't happened yet. And I think it would be fun to talk about that after it happens and your planning process. So
yeah, definitely.
Hold tight for that. We will ask for more specific and detailed questions on that when that gets closer. But one last question that I have is one person is nervous that they will embarrass themselves by not being able to take enough or needing to safe word quickly during a scene at a play party. And I understand this. Like, I, you know, doing kink in private is very different from doing it in public. And one of the ways that one of the many ways it is different is the sense of like being observed and being judged, and like there is the element of like how much pain can you take, or how much whatever the thing you're doing can you do, you know, will you get winded if you're a top, that kind of thing. And there's also the element of like, are people judging my attractiveness or what I'm wearing or whatever. So do you have any tips with for dealing with that type of self-consciousness when you're trying to play at a party?
Yeah, I think first of all, your scene is not going to be the only scene happening in the play space. Mm-hmm. And if your scene is a relatively mellow scene, you possibly just won't get that much of a crowd, right? Mm-hmm. There will be people around who like think you and the people you're playing with are cute, or people who are, that is also their speed. Mm-hmm. Like, not everyone that goes to the dungeon is a heavy player. Mm-hmm. And not every heavy player is heavy into pain. There are all kinds of reasons people will come to it. And I mean, we just did this whole episode for newbies to play parties. Newbies don't come to play parties to watch people get the shit kicked out of them. Newbies look fucking terrified when there are heavy scenes happening in the dungeon. Like, they come over to me while I'm DMing, and they're like, how do you, is that person okay? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on over there? Like, they are, there is a whole contingent of attendees at whatever party you're going to that is perfectly happy to see someone get hit with, like, a flogger for a little while and have a nice butt get nice and pink and, like, wiggle around and everything and then be done. Like, people are thrilled to see that.
Yeah, we all have different reasons, you know, for consuming media, like, on a, along a similar line. Like, not everyone wants to watch an action movie that's, like, a high, fast-paced, you know, car chase. And in the same way, like, not everybody wants to see a super heavy BDSM scene. There are other reasons to enjoy watching one. I've enjoyed watching scenes at parties that were really cute or really romantic or really, like, slow building and dramatic. And, like, definitely when I do see a heavy scene, I do, like, watch it as if it is a very dramatic action film, like, big reactions, like, I'm into it. But that's definitely not the only type of scene that I like to watch. And I also think kinksters are, like, probably more forgiving and understanding of pain limits and such than you think they are, because, like, we all have our limits. Like, not every kinkster is a superhero, and they don't need to be.
And watching a scene does not tell you how much pain that person is taking.
Yes, or how much pain they are feeling.
Yeah.
Subjectively.
I have toys that are loud as shit that don't do a goddamn thing. Like, I have a paddle that you whack someone with it. Well, my partner has a paddle. It's fine. It gets used on my butt. And it echoes through the halls of wherever we are. Like, there are people in other rooms who are like, so you that person with that paddle? Like, and it's nothing. It's like, I have a super bruised butt, and maybe I'll yelp if they, like, haul off with that thing. Mm-hmm. But I have other things. The meanest thing I have is a tiny little carbon fiber cane that just goes flick when I get hit with it. And I scream like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
So, like, looking at a thing does not tell you how much it hurts. Your reactions are going to convey far more. So if you're deeply enjoying the sensation that you're receiving, it's going to be an interesting scene to watch. If you're very much an exhibitionist and, like, you want to be the star of the show in that dungeon and you want everyone looking at you and you know that you can't capture that attention because you are the biggest pain slut in the dungeon taking the meanest, scariest thing, which, like, yes, that scene is going to attract attention. Mm-hmm. Find the thing that you do that is cute, right? Like, are you, you know, are you and your partners, like, littles, so you can do this big, bright, colorful scene with lots of giggling and, like, thematic stuff? Mm-hmm. Are you, you know, are you going to do this, like, deeply sensual, romantic, sexy, massage, like, slow build type scene? Mm-hmm. Take the thing that you do like and stretch that and exaggerate that and play into that and build a scene around that if you want to create an audience. But don't try and wedge yourself into the thing you think people will want to watch, because you won't be good at it and people won't come watch you.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, those toys that are really loud but don't actually feel like much. And I wonder if those would be a good option for somebody who wants to seem or to feel like they can take a lot of pain, or to be perceived that way, but, like, doesn't actually want to take a lot of pain, because, like, that might assuage some of your self-consciousness if it's just, like, theatrically seeming like you're taking a lot.
And when you're spacey and getting hit with something that's really loud, even if it doesn't feel that intense, like, sensation, like, the physical amount of pain that you're getting may not be that much, but it's loud and everyone around you gasps and it's shocking and it comes fast and it still feels like a heavier scene. Like, not in the same way, but it's not like you're just, like, faking and playing up and not and getting hit with pillows. Like, you're still getting hit. You can just make, like, things can seem more intense than they are if you want to create a scene like that.
Yeah. And in terms of feeling self-conscious about your appearance, like we've been saying this whole time, there probably are not as many people watching you as you think there are. This is just the case at, like, every kind of party. But also, if they are watching you, it's because they've chosen to, and that's probably because they're interested in you and your scene. whether in a sexual way or just, you know, interested in watching. So, I mean, I know it's really hard to shake that off. And this is part of why I really encourage dressing up for play parties, like not only to hit the dress code requirements, but also because if you feel that you look your best, you are going to probably have a better time if that's something that matters to you. And I think it's worth putting a little extra effort in if that's going to make you feel better when you're like on the St. Andrew's Cross or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I think that's it for this week, unless you had anything further to add.
No, I think that about wraps it up.
Okay. Well, folks, I hope that if you do go to a play party soon, whether it's your first or your thousandth, that you have a good time and you manage to shake off those expectations and have fun no matter what you do or don't do. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at Kate Writes About Sex. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And you can listen to my other podcast, which I co-host with my dear friend and recent shroom trip sitter, Brent Black. It's called Question Box. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. This coming Saturday, February 29th, I'll also be at Tess's party in Manhattan. You can go to Tess.org for all the details on that. That's TES.org. Together We're the Dildorks. You can find us at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. Rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts and makes us easier for other folks to find. You can also support us by tossing a couple of bucks our way at patreon.com/thedildorks. It helps us keep being awesome and going to cool play parties.
Thanks so much to Protodome for doing our theme song. Thank you to Amy for doing our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
What are your limits while you're not high so that when you are all like horny and spacey at the, I'm going to take that again because I said high, not horny. And like, you know what I meant. However, like fucking different kinds of intoxicants. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was very good. Shrooms was basically what I thought it was going to be like. If perhaps slightly less scary. I mean, it was still kind of scary. It was just like a lot of strong emotional reactions to everything. And like, as you know, I'm already a very emotionally reactive person. So like everything was making me cry or laugh really hard. And I was like dancing a lot and marching around a lot and speaking in musical theater references. And oh yeah, he was extremely good. He stayed with me for literally 6 hours while I was tripping, and we basically just had one long, intense conversation for 6 hours. So yeah, because he had offered to leave, like to leave me alone so that I could like go into the trip and like experience that. And I got really scared when he started to leave, and I was like, no, 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 no. So he stayed. Yeah. He's good. Yeah, Brent was like being my shrooms DJ and just like putting on whatever I told him to put on. He was the best.